Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm chatting to writer-director Rhett Etz Butler about his debut film, Nefarious, Jamaica's first locally produced horror movie. Over the course of the interview, we talk comprehensively about the making of Nefarious, including the extensive background research into voodoo rented, and the experience of shooting an exorcism scene with a genuine voodoo priest. Away from the movie, I also chat to Rhett about how he got into horror, some of his personal horror favourites, and how he hopes with his movies to tackle some of the cultural stereotypes surrounding Jamaica. Plus, what movie he's working on next. There's a whole lot in there, and I can't wait for you to listen to this interview. But before that, I do want to quickly remind you the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, and on Radio Public. Anyway, now that plug's out the way, on to the interview with Rhett. Hi, Rhett. Welcome to New Horror Express. Good to have you on the show.
Hi, Scott. Nice to be here present as well.
So, We're here to talk about your debut feature film, Nefarious. Tell the listeners a little bit about Nefarious, a little bit about this story, what it's all about.
Sure. Nefarious is about young Jamaica. And, of course, it's a Jamaican horror movie and possibly the first of its type. And it's about a young inner city youth who actually falls in love with a girl, and in trying to get her, her brother takes him through a number of sort of criminal and necromantic experiences. Ultimately, in the end, I don't want to spoil it for you, but ultimately, in the end, he will discover what his real purpose was for the entire thing. One may consider it somewhat of a slasher, but it's a mixture of genres within horror, sub-genres within horror. By the end, you would actually know what specific genre it is, but throughout it deals with certain local folklores as well. It includes the practice of voodoo, but in Jamaica it's referred to as obia, for those who may not be familiar with that. And of course, obia has two different dimensions from my understanding, the necromancy and the general obia, which is used predominantly for good. So the necromantic part of it is when it's used for the evil purposes.
What was the genesis of the project? How did you first come up with an idea for the script?
Well, sure. In 2003, I wrote a script. Surprisingly, this was actually based in the UK. Totally different film. And I met a friend a few years later on a set for a pilot program that we wanted to do within the music industry, the Jamaican music industry. And it was there I started speaking with him, a gentleman by the name of Alan Tennant. And he also was interested in making a film. So in discussing with him, I said, look, I want to do horror. And he wanted to do more like a traditional gangster type movie. I said, all right, tell you what I'll do. I'll write the entire thing over and see whether or not I can combine some of those elements. And that's what I did. I wrote it over in about 3 months, and we met again and went through it. He loved it at that time. And that's how the project actually got off ground. In fact, prior to migrating from Jamaica to Canada, I decided that, you know, I just have to shoot the movie. If I don't do it now, chances are I may never, ever get another opportunity to do it. So what I did was I started shooting at around 7 p.m. at nights after work. I was working a regular 9-to-5 job. And on weekends, basically, until 2 p.m. in the morning. 2 a.m., actually, I should say.
And why was what necessitated the change from, you know, you were saying it was initially UK based but then you decided to shoot in Jamaica?
Well, the first script I wrote, really, I was writing without thinking of budget or anything like that. I just wanted to write freely. I realized at that time, you know, it was difficult trying to get a movie made back in 2003. And then as technology improved, I realized that I could actually do it where I am. And that it would also be a very interesting story because of actually the difference in people and culture. And, you know, with that in mind, I decided, okay, I will rewrite the script and, you know, adapt it to be more local, so to speak. Nonetheless, I still have that old script. Hopefully one day I will shoot it. It's a completely different story, you know. But yes, as I said, you know, adapting it to a local setting to fit what Jamaica represents at that time.
I take it didn't have the kind of voodoo stuff that you talked about.
Yeah, the original script did not feature that. It was more like a gothic horror sort of thing, and that was inspired by, you know, the tons of movies I've been watching over the years, thanks to my mother who introduced me to horror, really. And you know, but as I said, I started drawing on experiences that I had. She was also instrumental in taking me to some of these revival churches. Well, it's sort of an alternate to traditional Christian worship, where it incorporates an African component to it, and their rituals are different and stuff like that. And you know, getting that experience at a younger age and remembering some of the things that I saw, I realized, you know, it would really make for a good story and to incorporate those things. So those experiences provided much of the input in creating the story.
And did you do much research in those terms and the kind of voodoo you were talking about? I'm sorry, I forgot the specific name of the Jamaican type.
Yeah, the Obia.
Obia, yes.
Yeah.
Because it seems like you've thought quite deeply about this. You know, you were talking quite eloquently about it there, and I, you know, it seems like you maybe did a bit of research, and or maybe you're just familiar with it through your own experiences.
Well, I did do research. It is not something that I've been around since, I would say, early teens. I used to go with my mom to some of these revival things that were happening. However, what I can tell you is that the persons who actually performed those rituals in the movie are real. So what I did, you know, I actually went to them because I wanted it to be as authentic as possible. And I went to these individuals and, you know, asked them if, you know, they would be okay being on film doing this. And of course, they were okay with it. And even though, you know, acting was actually happening at the time, the procession that was going on was actually real. Real to the point where on completion of shooting that main voodoo scene, yeah, they wanted to make sure that the entire set was cleared of evil spirits because they thought that the very act, you know, would have conjured something. So even my protagonist, you know, the lead actor there, you know, even though he's supposed to be acting, and I hoped he was really acting, but he seemed really to be under some influence during shooting at that time. So you know, yes, the research was done, but in order to spare me from having to do too much, I made sure to use real persons who are in that sort of thing.
And how can, but like, were they worried at all in terms of the real people? And you know, when you said it's a horror movie, were they worried that it would be mocked at all or anything?
Well, the first set of persons that I approached, they said no. The second one I approached, they were fine with it. Of course, there were certain conditions that I had to respect. And, you know, they're not being portrayed as evil people, for say, but just to understand that within every, you know, sort of religion, you know, there is evil and there's good. And so for them, you know, they're depicting what can be evil of it as well as what can be good throughout the story. So they were quite fine with it.
And did you always want your first feature to be a horror movie? You know, you were saying that you've been watching horror movies, a lot of horror movies for a long time. Is that your favorite type of movie? And is that what you always intended your first film to be?
Most definitely. In fact, I wanted to have what may be considered a pure vanilla horror movie, if there's such a term. Because Nefarious is a combination of, you know, urban lifestyle mixed with horror, of course. But, you know, horror has always been a genre that I've been attracted to. And initially, it was something I hated. As a child, you know, I remember whenever horror movies were being watched, I would stay out of the house, wouldn't have anything to do with it. But then we used to use video cassettes, and so I wouldn't even touch the tapes. But then, you know, getting on to my later teen years, you know, I said thanks to my mom, because, you know, she was quite a horror fan. I remember seeing her locked up watching Amityville Horror by herself, but she introduced me to The Exorcist. You know, I watched it with her one day, just the both of us, you know, and there I was, you know, started getting sucked into this thing. I started seeking more and more, and my older brothers at the time, you know, they were crazy about horror as well, and you know, they would always get the most morbid stuff to bring in and expose me to. So you know, as I said, later years I started doing that, and then I started doing a lot of artwork, you know, that depicted horrific situations, creature designs and stuff like that, to the point where I was told I had a rather morbid sense of humor in high school by one of my teachers who was going through my book. So, you know, it was really an evolution, and to this day it's one of those genres that I really do enjoy. I mean, when I go to the movies, yes, I do like drama, I do like other genres as well, but I like to be taken somewhere that, you know, I'm not seeing every day, to experience things that I don't necessarily want to experience in real life. You know, this is the thing with horror, that even though one may think that it's just a straightforward thing, horror includes a lot of dimensions. And in fact, horror can include just about every other genre of film and still remain a horror movie. You know, a lot of slow-paced horror movies actually teach us that. The combination of science fiction and horror, the combination of action and horror, the combination of drama and horror. And I would like to think that most horror movies are really dramas. Dramas depicting something supernatural, you know, especially, you know, when you read Stephen King's novels or watch movies made from his novels, a lot of them are really about people, right? And understanding that with Nefarious also, you know, I spent the time trying to build my characters, you know, so that, you know, when and if something should happen, you're actually connecting with that person, you know. So, yeah, horror all the way, man.
Yeah, I mean, you can explore a lot of different things in horror, like you say, and a lot of horror movies and are dramas as well as being horror movies. My favorite horror movie is The Shining, which is is a horror movie, but it's also a drama about a family breakdown and madness and
exactly,
you know, there's so many things going on. And yeah, there's so many horror movies that you can mention in recent times, things like Hereditary and The Witch.
Yes, yes.
All sorts of different, The Babadook, you know, that's, yeah, you know, these are dramas, but they're also very much horror movies.
Very much horror movies. You know, one of the things I discovered with horror, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, I find horror movies to have a similarity with music. And let me expand on that to clarify what I'm saying. I find, you know, for years you might be singing a song and you're enjoying it, but you never really understand what that artist was saying or what the lyrics was about until you are in that situation, until you've had that particular experience, and then suddenly, boom, you know, really, this is what the song means to you, right? And I find the same thing with horror. You know, you might have an audience sitting there of, say, 300 persons, and the movie will connect with, say, 25% of them because of the experiences they have had. One may say, okay, well, I don't believe in demons coming out of the closets or whatever the case is, but there are experiences that some of us have had that really has no explanation. And so, you know, when you see that depicted on screen, it's speaking to you differently. Like, you know, there are persons who would watch The Exorcist and have an entirely different experience than someone else who looks at it as just a mundane thing, right? Whatever it may be, experiencing a family member with insanity or whatever it is, but, you know, having an encounter with what you think might be an evil entity, right? Or something in the night in your house or your experience, the movie speaks differently to you than someone else, you know? And that's why I really do love horror movies.
And yeah, like what you say, I mean, it's interesting how different, in different ways, people connect to horror films. And The Exorcist, again, is a kind of classic example, particularly, you know, because a lot of that movie is about, you know, like you say, you know, a family member who's possessed, and you could relate that to, like, mental illness or whatever. And also, it's a movie that's about a loss of faith, or somebody who regains their faith. And, you know, I'm not a religious person, but I could see how, if you were, that you know, that would connect in a very different way.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. And so this is why, you know, as I try to see as many movies that I feel I want to see without paying attention to certain critical reviews, because the experience is different for everyone, right? And I want to see it for myself to see whether or not it is something that speaks to me, whether or not it is something, you know, that I enjoy, right? Because there are some movies that are out there that for some reason, you know, highly underrated. There was one in the 80s called The Entity. I mean, it is a classic horror movie, right? And you know, not many persons may know of that film, but it's an awesome scare ride.
It's not actually one that I've seen.
You should really check it out. It's called The Entity. It is said to be based on a true story, and it is about a woman who was being sexually molested by a demon, an incubus, so to speak. But you should really check it out.
Okay. I'll look it up after our interview.
Yeah.
Was there many? I mean, obviously, you're highly steeped in horror movies, well versed in horror movies. Did you park that to one side when making Nefarious, or were there certain movies that kind of directly influenced the writing and the making of?
Well, in terms of the making of Nefarious, really, there were influence from several other horror movies that I've seen over the years. One that I love very much, which is The Lost Boys. Though it's not a scary movie, it's one of the fun movies I saw in the 80s. And I really love that story. And, you know, thinking about it and also thinking about how I unfold my story in Nefarious actually provided some level of guide for me. in that sense. But in terms of other genres, not really. You know, a lot of it was written, again, based on experience and just trying to build a story around these characters. I said experience because there are things that I have experienced in terms of violence or things that I thought that I saw in the dark, right? And so I drew on these things, you know, in terms of putting the story together. So really, you know, it is something new, especially for a Jamaican audience or anyone who is interested in seeing something, you know, coming from the Caribbean in terms of horror, which is quite rare.
Why do you think that is? You say very right near the start of the interview, and the trailer says it is the first locally produced Jamaican horror, and there's not a history of horror movies being, you know, coming out there.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I actually have a determination to make my contribution to the Jamaican film industry. And that is the genre that I'm concentrating on because there is so much to tell in that area. We grew up on horror stories. In Jamaica, a ghost is referred to as a duppy. And we grew up on what you would call duppy stories, right? Mm-hmm. Some of which are based on things that people experienced, and some of them are just stories that, you know, mothers and grandmothers told. So having that background, of course, I knew it's a matter of time, and I really wanted to head down that road. Right. A lot of other things have come out of Jamaica. We've seen music-related movies. We've seen movies related to crime, etc. But nothing pertaining to horror. Yes, it is risky for somebody who's a first-time director doing that. But I believe definitely that, you know, there's a market for that. And one can only get better with telling more stories, you know, being that this is the initial one. So far, I've been getting a lot of interest locally in Jamaica about it and anticipation of a release. I met with someone last week, actually, discussing future plans for a release for the film. Hopefully, this would be very soon. I know the summer month can be very competitive, so we'll see as to how we can schedule the release and have a premiere in Kingston, Jamaica. So it's definitely something new. One of the artists featured on the track is an artist by the name of Tommy Lee Sparta, who uses a combination of, say, goth imagery and goth style with traditional Jamaican dancehall. That is something entirely new. And, you know, he's doing very well. The thing is that you know, one may think that, all right, so in certain close communities, persons might not be interested in certain things, but that's not necessarily true. You know, you might be surprised as to how many Jamaicans actually listen to rock music and country and western and stuff like that. You know, so one cannot make that assumption based on what is projected, you know, in media generally. So I do believe, you
it
know.
Does it, seem, it does seem certainly in the Western culture in Europe, it does seem there's quite a narrow view of what kind of Jamaica produces, and it does tend to be there's this narrow view of like music stuff and gangland stuff, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I'm hoping to push beyond that and to widen again, which is why I do horror, you know. Horror might rotate around some of that stuff initially. But the next script I'm doing, you know, as I said, it's pure vanilla horror, entirely Jamaican. This one features Jamaican dialogue, and I wanted it to be as authentic as possible in terms of, you know, really how do Jamaicans speak there. Hence the reason it is subtitled with some English inserts. And I think the more you watch the film, you begin to understand more, you know, how Jamaicans speak. But yeah, you know, as you mentioned, the narrow view of what comes out of Jamaica, you know, I'm hoping to to go beyond that. And as I said, the film industry is one of the key areas to do that. And I made a point to someone in the local newspaper sometime last year in an interview I did. I said, you know, in building an industry, persons are going to tell the stories that they know first until they can build on something else. I remember back in the early 80s, most of the movies coming out of Asia were kung fu films. And, you know, that's what we knew, you know. But now there are all sorts of genres. I mean, South Korea produces some awesome films, awesome horror films too, you know. So I think the evolution of an industry has to do with, you know, not having any expectations. You know, if persons feel that they want to tell stories of gangsterism, etc., you know, let them do it. Eventually the market will get tired of it. But I think it naturally evolves into other genres because the creativity is there. Recently, I believe some students at the local university started making an online horror series, somewhat of a vampire series. You know, this just speaks to what's going on there. That, you know, there's much more to Jamaica than just, say, reggae music, dancehall, and jerk chicken. You know, it's quite a complex culture and, you know, subcultures as well. So, you know, I hope to be one of those who help to open that up to the world.
I think that's a great aim. I think, you know, obviously so many cultures have complex things about them that, you know, and we just take kind of these odd stereotypes and don't take a nuanced view. But like you say, once you kind of open these cultures up to people, you know, through things like film, you know, people do start to have a more nuanced view. Like you mentioned South Korea there, all sorts of, you know, Korean movies come out in the UK, you know, not just like kung fu actioners. And the same with Japan as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, like there was a time where, you know, it was just Asia was just martial arts, and it's cool. But did you feel any need to include the crime element in your film to kind of have that hook because you were aware of that narrow view? And then obviously open up, expanding with all the horror that's in Nefarious.
Yeah, sure. That's a good question. In fact, as I mentioned earlier on, you know, Alan wanted to shoot crime gangster. I wanted to do horror, and so I did a combination. However, I purposely did some things in the movie to move away from that. It does include those elements. I had to, given where the story takes place, you know, in Kingston. But what I did is endeavor to show a cross-section of the social stratification in Jamaica and also the landscape. You know, I could have shot the entire thing in an urban setting, you know, showing very harsh environment, etc., in so-called ghetto communities. But what I did, I showed what we refer to as uptown, you know, and I also show the rural area as well, in sort of having a holistic approach that the story is telling, you know, it's just not one type of condition that exists there. You know, people live in various different ways and, you know, at various levels, etc. So, yes, there is some of the crime element in it, but it is not the main thing of the story, right? It actually works as a catalyst in moving it along.
And also, including that element, you seem like a very intelligent guy and a thoughtful guy. Were you at all worried about including that element in terms of like perpetuating negative stereotypes about you?
Yes, I was. Right. And which is why I did that. I thought about it, you know, okay, so what am I showing, or, you know, how would persons interpret it? But ultimately, a film is a film. you know, and the good thing about it is that it's horror. If one wants to believe that zombies or vampires are running around and creating havoc in Kingston, then, you know, kudos to them. But the reality of it is that people do see things and they do believe it sometimes. They say, okay, that's what's going on there and I'm scared. I mean, I'm just coming back from Jamaica, and I can tell you this. I went through Montego Bay, and I think that airport has roughly 20 gates, and all 20 were filled. The immigration hall was crowded, right? And one of the arguments I used is that a lot of persons in the Caribbean do seek to travel to North American and European countries. And so, you know, a lot of films coming out of North America are excessively violent, some of them. So the question I normally ask then, why is it that so many persons are still seeking to go there? I think ultimately, you know, people will see beyond it and understand, okay, this is a movie. You know, bad things can happen just about anywhere, right? And so that, you know, that aspect of it, you know, I relied on, you know, that people would actually be thinking wider than what is focused to them on a tube, right? And focusing on a screen. And so again, you know, it is why I said I sought to include various segments of the social stratification just to ensure that it's not just depicting that. And it is also one of the reasons, even though I've always wanted to do a horror first, it's one of the reasons that, you know, I was adamant in not doing a drama first or anything that would actually feature that sort of depiction as the main theme, because you know, I didn't want people going away getting the wrong impression. You know, I've seen on the news when things are happening in Jamaica, one would think it's the entire island, and that's just not true. Generally, you know, the normal Jamaican, I can tell you, is a very nice person. In fact, there are communities that, as a Jamaican, I may not be able to enter, but foreigners can. Most foreigners who visit the island, they do have a very good experience, and Jamaicans will treat you very well. Just to give you an example, years ago, I was going to do an interview in Ocho Rios, and Ocho Rios is roughly, at that time, it took roughly 2 hours to get from Kingston to Ocho Rios. And it was an early morning interview, and I didn't want to soil my clothes. So, you know, I drove down in a t-shirt, and on approaching where I was to do the interview, I had nowhere to change. And I just drove into someone's yard, and the lady was sitting on her veranda with her kids. About 4 kids, and I, you know, I told her, I said, I have an interview, and she said, it's okay. You know, she prepared breakfast for me, actually. And, wow. Yeah, and had me go in and train, make sure that my tie was straight, that sort of thing. You know, these are the kind of people that, you know, exist there. But of course, there's always the bad element in any society, and you know, the bad news do travel faster than the good news. Right. Yeah. So, you know, one has to contend with that. But ultimately, you know, Jamaica is Jamaica, and it's a story, and that's all it is. You know, it's a story about horror. And, you know, it's not gratuitous violence, but it does features certain realism as to the reality of life for people in certain, you know, certain areas, and, you know, utilize that to tell your story.
I was also wondering with Nefarious, I've talked to a bunch of directors who've made like their first feature film, but quite often they've made some shorts or some things like that beforehand. But as far as I can see, it looks like you've just dived straight into this in terms of directing. Why was that? And did you just make a conscious decision, I'm just going to dive in to a feature?
Sure. I did make a few shorts. None of those are available publicly, but they were not really horror. They were really dramas. And those were done when I was trying to test my skills, actually. I did a 2-day screenwriting workshop with JAMPRO, that's a Jamaica Promotions element. They deal with marketing of Jamaican goods, etc., including film, right? And so they had brought down a someone who had worked, I think, in the movie Seven or something like that, to have a screenwriting workshop. I had done that. I had started writing prior to that. And subsequent to that, I did another two-day workshop at the University of West Indies with the Caribbean Media School there. And that was to do a short film, which I was successful in doing. And those were using, I would say, worse off equipment, right? But then 1080p was not available. And so when 1080p became available, I bought my first camera, which is a Canon T2i, and I've been practicing with it. And I started doing a lot of low light shooting practices, to sort of build my skills in that area. And especially when I realized that doing horror, I'm going to have a lot of dark scenes and I would need to actually light them properly. So I spent a lot of time practicing those things. And so, that was the extent of the experience I had before going full-fledged into a feature. What I can tell you, though, is that before actually starting to shoot Nefarious, on completion of writing, what I did was to do testing of the actors. Everyone who actually played in it, well, I would say 90% of the cast had to do a screen test. And on the final decision of who would go through, I actually had a round table reading of the entire script, as to say what worked and what didn't, right? And on completion of that, then I started doing some storyboarding and location scouting and all that stuff. So I did a lot of plan work before actually shooting. As I said, I was working at the time. Had I not been working, I could have shot that movie in 3 weeks. But it took me roughly 3 months and, having to get the equipment in and, all the peripheral problems that one would have in making a feature. Of course, what I can tell you is that, in doing it and planning it is completely two different things. I don't think you ever really know everything, but I really learned a lot during that shoot. And what I can compare it to, I was watching a documentary with Steven Spielberg when he was speaking about making Jaws, that if he had known what he was getting into, he would not have done it. At some point in time, I did feel that way. Yeah. I had that experience, things were dropping out, my song recorder died. There were things that I was learning, there were things I did a lot of research prior to actually shooting, but then things go wrong and they will always go wrong, and that's one of the fun about shooting a low budget film, independent film, is that your creativity kicks in because you at all cost you must make it work, right? And for me, like, some of the things I would not do again, for example, is doing makeup and directing. In between shots, I had to be applying makeup and see whether or not it looks okay, then get back behind the camera, testing audio, testing just about everything, on site. It's really tough. It's really tough. And then, after all of that, after finish shooting, going back home and testing the footage, make sure that all of that's downloaded, onto a safe drive, keeping multiple copies and stuff like that. So it was really a tough experience jumping in for a feature, right? It's nothing, the rigor of actually shooting the feature is nothing I experienced when doing the shorts, even though I'd done roughly 3 shorts prior to actually doing a full film. On completion, I ended up with a movie that was 2 hours and 35 minutes long. I know no way that could work, right? So, of course, I put it on the cutting board. It's now 1 hour and 47 minutes long. So, yeah, it was really a grueling experience. But what I have learned from it, it's golden. It's really golden for what I can take into my next feature.
Yeah, I take it you wouldn't do so many things. I mean, like looking at the IMDb page for Nefarious, it seems like you did pretty much everything from camera to lighting to writing, directing, set decorating. It seems like you were everywhere. Was that purely a budgetary thing, or was like, this is my project, I'm going to take the reins generally?
No. not it wasn't autocratically driven. It all had to do with budget and trying to make it work. I must give a lot of thanks to Alan Tennant, who worked on Camera B. You know, he was a savior there. But what happened is that in terms of looking at the budget to actually make it, this is how I ended up saving, having to edit myself and do color correction and audio and all of that, right, in the post-production stage. But during shooting, right, as I said, you know, I had to teach myself how to do makeup work, how to build certain props, how to do certain things. In terms of the director of photography, you know, extensive research was done in that area as well, as to say what, you know, type of lens was I going to use, the type of equipment that I was using. I had to include a Metabone speed booster, especially for those night shots, and a wonderful lens which was shooting at f/0.95 for my night shots. And that Nefarious is primarily shot on the GH4, and you know, I converted those files to DPX afterwards, and then downres to 2K 2048 by 8858, right, which came out with awesome color range in terms of the dynamic range. So throughout shooting, a lot of it was really budgetary constraint. I realized, you know, I just had to learn how to do certain things. You know, I had to transport the cast as well. You know, you have to feed your cast as well. So it was very demanding and very tough work, but there was no other way to get it done, because I could not afford to get a makeup artist. I could not afford to get a DP, you know, or someone to record sound, etc. So a lot of that was research work, thanks to the University of YouTube and Google, you know, and all these persons who actually put information out there to share with everyone. You know, that's something I want to do, you know, as well. At some point in time, I'm going to upload something, you know, telling exactly how I got this done and, you know, everything that was involved. Because I think today, unlike, say 10 years ago, what you can achieve with a crew of three, previously you might have needed 50 people, right? And as I said, you know, you can get real nice low light video these days, right? If you understand your lighting concepts, etc., you know, nice audio, excellent picture quality. And once you have a dependable cast, right, that was important for me. Everyone who signed on to the project had to be someone I could depend on, right? So, you know, I am going to shoot at 10 o'clock tonight. Can I come and pick you up at that time, right? Everyone had to be, because it was a time constraint, right? I'd rented those two GH4 cameras, and the backup cameras was my Canon T2i. Basically. So again, you know, just every aspect as a low budget indie filmmaker, you really have to get your hands involved in just about everything. If you don't have the resources, like, how are you going to get it done? What kept me going is the understanding that once what people see is what's in the frame, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on in your 360 view, it is what you want them to see in that aspect ratio. And, you know, that kept me focused. Okay, this is the picture that I'm taking. This is what I want the audience to see. This is the audio that goes along with it, right? And this is the performance that I need. I get those three well done and I'm good, right? I can move on and I can improvise, you know, and that's how I actually got the project made. You know, well, hopefully in future I don't have to do that. You know, because it was really a killer. And you know, yeah. And then the work really begins with editing, right? Because on completion of all that, Alan had actually edited one version. I said we would do two versions and compare. He did one version. I had actually done over the entire thing and showed it to him, and you know, he really liked it. So then at that point in time, the film was not colored as yet. I had a friend who had promised to color it for me. When I sent him the drives, they would not work on his system. So then I had to go and teach myself how to color, right? Again, back to the University of YouTube. There is so much information out there for independent filmmakers that it depends on what your project is, right? From applying makeup to, you know, getting your stuff done. And, you know, there's just a wealth of information out there, right? When I was 22, I owned a video store. All of that was information from online, right? And, you know, I was able to run that business by learning online, you know, how to operate a video rental business. Right. So, I mean, today for the independent filmmaker, yes, there are barriers. And one of the main barriers is always distribution, even though that is somewhat changing. But actually getting your story made today has never been this possible, you know, with the access to the technology that we have now. Right. I mean, I invested in a computer for editing this film. It's just 24 gigabyte RAM with a i7 processor and a dedicated 2 gigabytes card, you know, and a regular 1080p 32-inch television. that's what I used. Did my calibrations, of course. You know, I was aware of the color differences and stuff when you're editing, you know, to pay attention to those things. And you know, discovering that building audio for cinema is different, right? That's something actually had to do a lot of research on. And so, wow, you know, that I didn't know while shooting, right? Your audio levels for cinema. And I have to give thanks and kudos and shout out to the creators of DCP-O-Matic. You know, I'm not doing advertising for them, but I'm just saying, because it's an independent
this
forum.
This episode is sponsored by DCP.
but primarily because, you know, independent filmmakers are listening, you know, I was able to create my own DCP using that open source free software online, right? And, you know, I was able to create a perfect DCP, which I took into a cinema and test. It worked perfectly, right? Colors were perfect, aspect ratio, sound, everything. And all of this was done in my home. So that I could not do 5 years ago. There's no way I would have had the resources to do it, right? Cost and resources were prohibitive. So I'm just saying that, you know, today we really can make our own movies. It's just the final delivery or the distribution, you know, is where the bottleneck and the problem lies. But yeah, it's not possible.
I was interested, how did it come about that Nefarious became your first feature? I read an interview with you where you had previously written a script called Dark Lord.
Yes.
Why did that not get made? Is that something that you still plan to make in the future?
Yeah, I still plan on making it. Dark Lord was the one I was mentioning to you that I wrote first. In fact, when I wrote Dark Lord and had it copyrighted, I actually had a publisher in the United States who was interested in turning it into a novel. At that time, self-publishing was not really available, and the cost to do it. At that time, you know, I had to wait. I was just about leaving to go and do my master's, and I chose to do that because I didn't want to become a starving artist. So I went ahead and did that, and I, you know, kept the script, which I still have. In fact, interestingly so, there are some development to it and changes that I actually want to make. So at one point in time, I did receive an IBM number, an Amazon CreateSpace, as I was just going to put the script out there on Amazon CreateSpace, you know, for anyone to read, purchase and read. But no, there are certain changes that I'd like to make, you know, with it. And hopefully, provided that, you know, I do make a career in film, I definitely want to see that film come to fruition. As I said, it's a goth horror. I do love those movies, despite not many of them. One of the last truly goth horror that I really enjoyed was Sleepy Hollow. Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow. You know, one might consider it a popcorn movie, but I just think it was great. You know, and one of the best ones also was Black Sunday. I think that was done in the 60s.
Yeah,
that movie. And again, thanks to Mom, because she was the one who introduced that movie to me.
pretty cool Mom introducing you to Italian horror classics.
Yeah, she did. You know, she introduced me to all those movies. I remember once, you know, I was talking to her, and when she mentioned Mick Jagger, and I was saying, "Mom, you know about Mick Jagger?" saying, of course. You know, so she, you know, she's really up with it, and really cool. You know, so I have to give her thanks for that and the influence. You know, but yeah, I couldn't make Dark Lord first because it would be considered an expensive film. You know, when you just started writing, they normally recommend that you write freely. Don't think about budget and limitations. Just write what it is that's in your head. And, you know, it's ultimately your story. Now, if you're going to shoot it, then, you know, you start making changes depending on resources. I think I could shoot Dark Lord today with the technology that's available and widely available. I'm not good at CGI, right? I do some level of CGI, but, you know, I wouldn't say I'm an expert at it. But, you know, because it's a historical piece, you know, certain composition that would be necessary in order to tell that story, I can actually be achieved today quite easily. So yeah, man, in future I hope to do it. And you know, I as I said, I'm working now on something that is very very gory, but also very, very, very horror, in the sense of ghosts and, you know, Jamaican dopeys and stuff like that. But yeah, man, you know, that's where I hope to take it.
Yeah. And that's going to be the second feature, yeah?
Yes.
Does that have a title yet, or do you not want to reveal that?
I don't have a title for it as yet. I was discussing with someone in Hungary who is a potential distributor. I'm not quite sure what may become of it, so I don't say anything. As he's interested in having Nefarious shown in some cinemas in the UK. So we were discussing this project, for which he's very much interested in. And, you know, hopefully I'll really get it done as soon as possible. I'm just in the writing stage now. You know, try to reworking the story. I find it best when you write something to put it down at least for another 2 months or so. You know, when your ideas, you know, start to melt in, and you can go back and make certain changes, the things that may not necessarily work. But yeah, man, definitely second story is horror all the way.
And have you found a distributor for Nefarious? Is it? It's had a premiere, hasn't it?
Not as yet. The premiere I'm having in Jamaica once I get the release date from the local cinema there. What happened though is that I'd entered it into the Olympus Film Festival. Yeah, in Los Angeles, and you know, they notified me of it winning Best Film. I wasn't there, so
all right.
You know, yeah. So I'm really grateful for that, that it was able to snatch that. You know, it actually feels good when, you know, someone has actually watched your film and actually appreciated it. You know, not everyone is going to like whatever you do, But it always feels good that someone sees it and can appreciate the hard work that goes in.
And do you think you want to continue making I know you've moved to Canada now. Do you feel you want to continue making films in Jamaica, making Jamaican stories?
I will. It doesn't mean that I would not do anything in Canada, of course, or a combination between, say, Canada and Jamaica. Definitely. But, you know, I want to do more Jamaican horror films. Because as I said, you know, there's so much to tell there that is different. I think that can be an angle that is very different from what we're seeing all the time. You know, I try to stay away from jump scare type of filmmaking. All right, I can enjoy it up to a point, but I want to do something that, you know, surfaces the horror in another way without having, you know, a big bang. So, you know, I want to tell stories that would take someone who is not familiar with that culture or, you know, sees it as foreign and really immerse them into something different, you know, something to stimulate their sense of horror, really take you somewhere else.
Absolutely. Well, I would certainly look forward to checking out Nefarious whenever it does reach the UK. Well, is there any plans in those UK plans for any Scotland dates?
Well, we can definitely look into that. As I said, I own a DCP of it. Once I'm in the UK, I don't see it as a problem of, getting even a premiere in Scotland. If there's a market there that would be interested in a subtitled Jamaican film. but definitely, that's the way to see it first, on screen. And definitely, you know, I'll maintain the contact and let you know, see where the possibility do lie for it to be done.
Sure. Excellent. We'll keep in touch and we'll keep tabs on whenever Nefarious comes out here in the UK. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Sure. Thank you too for having me. I certainly appreciate it and the work that you're doing for independent film. This is awesome, it's a way of, you know, ensuring that, you know, movies that we want to see get made. You know, there are many potential filmmakers out there and persons with ideas. You know, it's a way of encouragement. You know, you can do it. Just get up and make your movie. Yeah, man. Yeah, so cool. Respect and thanks.
And thank you very much. Yes, we're all about promoting independent horror here at New Horror Express.
Sure. Thanks. Thank you very much.
That was my guest right there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. That is very nearly all for another edition of New Horror Express. But before I head on out, I'd like to give you a quick reminder that the best way you can support the show is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Radio Public. Also, be sure to join us again in 2 weeks' time for another exciting edition of New Horror Express. Until then, though, see ya!